Hello, and welcome to the Marketing and Engagement Podcast brought to you by 2355 Productions. This podcast is all about exploring different tactics for marketing, but also strategies and techniques to create lasting engagement with donors and customers. I'm your host, Ryan Sarver, and this is episode number 7. This week, we are talking with Kimberly Watts of Center for Global Impact, also known as CGI, which is located in Franklin, Indiana. CGI is a faith-based organization that primarily works in Cambodia, providing vocational and life skills training to vulnerable women. They also have a clothing line called Buy to V that is part of their business development program, which also happens to be sold in their boutique in Franklin. Lauren and I had the chance in this episode to talk with Kimberly about how COVID-19 shut down some of their major fundraising efforts, which if you're in the nonprofit world, you realize that's a major problem. And we talk a little bit about how they switched things up a couple times, because the first time it didn't work. And I think the second time it didn't work either, but they switched them up and they still found success. So it's a really interesting conversation that we think you will all enjoy. So with that said, let's jump right in. Well, welcome, Kimberly. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Ryan and Lauren, for having me.
Absolutely. So as we begin, tell us a little bit about who you are, where you work, what your role is, and what all you do.
Well, I am the Director of Development at Center for Global Impact, and we are an organization that is passionate about empowering the poor, protecting the vulnerable, and sharing the gospel. We do that in a few different ways. We have vocational training programs where we include some general education and life skills classes. And we also have a business development program, which is called Buy to Be. I think we'll talk about that here probably a little bit more in depth later on. But yeah, we want to work with women who are vulnerable to exploitation. Primarily, we work in the country of Cambodia right now and have three programs there.
Yeah. So you mentioned Buy to V. Tell us a little bit about what specifically is Buy to V and what's happening in Cambodia as part of that, and then also what's happening here with Buy to V.
Buy to V is our business development program. So it's a little different from the other programs that we have, because what we actually want to do is empower women to use their skills and their talents to earn a fair wage. And so with Buy to V, that's really focused around sewing a line of women's clothing and handbags. So they produce it there in our Buy to V workshop in Cambodia. Some of it is sold in our boutique there in Cambodia, but then we also ship it here to the United States, where we sell it at our brick and mortar store online at buytov.com. And then we also sell to wholesale around the US, as well as even occasionally outside of the US at this point. So what we do then is the sales from the products that these women are making goes back directly to supporting them. It provides fair wages for them so that they can provide for themselves and their families.
Yeah. So while there is some donor support to it, it is very much more of a business. Like as they work and the product is sold, then the money goes back to them. So the product that is sold is really what's supporting them.
Right. The majority of the support for the program comes from selling the products that they do make. We do subsidize with donor dollars, but it's a fairly minor portion at this point in time because they have done such a great job doing what they do.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about, and this comes back into Buy to V, but tell us a little bit about the annual March fundraising campaign and how with COVID, how you pivoted twice through that and trying to figure out like, what do you need to do to keep some of these programs going? Because again, as you know, you've got to keep selling and you've got to keep raising money. Talk to us a little bit about what you did and how you changed things up.
So every March and into April a little bit, we have been doing a peer-to-peer fundraising campaign, and we center it all around. We kind of build the whole campaign as a riff on the NCAA basketball tournament. And of course, COVID kind of threw that out the window with all the different cancellations and things like that. And that was really just a matter of days before our campaign was supposed to launch that they, you know, said, hey, we're not going to do it. And so we were scrambling last minute to figure out, okay, how do we completely revamp this entire campaign that's all about the NCAA March Madness with our Match Madness? We had already secured a matching gift, thank goodness. And so our donors were still able to allow us to have that matching gift. So we knew, okay, that component can stay the same, but everything else had to change. So we just decided to be really open and vulnerable with our donors and just say, hey, you know, this is a really uncertain time. We still have a real need in Cambodia that we want to continue to meet now and into the future. And that means getting donations in during this pandemic. We need their support. We know that could look different for different people as people feel the different economic impact in their own personal lives. You know, maybe they wanted to give 100, but they could really only give 20. That's fine. Like, every dollar counts. And so we were just really open and vulnerable. And it started off pretty well just by being that transparent with everybody. And then it kind of became stagnant. And after about a week, we really weren't seeing any donations coming in. And we thought, okay, this messaging, you know, everybody's being open, everybody's being transparent and vulnerable about there is still a need, even though things are very uncertain right now. And so we thought, we've got to mix this up because the message is just really getting lost in everything else. There was so much attention on COVID itself and just learning more as we started to learn more about this thing and the messaging with, you know, the deaths and the testing and how can we do this and how can we do that? It just, you know, it just drew too much attention for everybody that, you know, our open, vulnerable, honest message really wasn't hitting a chord with them. At the same time, we were also feeling within our organization that we really wanted to help the situation. You know, we're passionate about empowering the poor, protecting the vulnerable, and everybody is vulnerable to COVID. And so we thought, you know, we really wanted to help. It was just heavy on our hearts to be able to do something, but we're not a medical organization. We don't have doctors and nurses working for us, so we couldn't help in that way. We're not a relief organization, so we didn't have funds built up to address some of the tangible needs that people may be feeling here in the United States or throughout the world. And so we were really feeling a little bit helpless and kind of lost as to how to make an impact in this situation. And we were also struggling with our Buy2V program because we do sell at our boutique and we do wholesale. Well, when everybody's shut for business, nobody's purchasing the merchandise. We have a team of women that are very important to us that we want to continue to provide with employment, especially as they face shutdowns and the ramifications of a pandemic in their own country. And so we wanted to, you know, keep them going, keep them earning a fair wage, continuing to empower them and provide for them and help them. And so it kind of just this like perfect storm, perfect brainstorm, I guess, of things coming together. And we thought, you know what, we need to keep these women working. They sew. We're starting to see this call for cloth face masks at the time for hospitals primarily. What if we sewed face masks? Like, what if we did these cloth face masks and we could ship them here and, you know, and keep some there and give them to the people that are on the front lines, which we started doing. And then we quickly realized we weren't going to be able to ship outside of Cambodia. But at that point, we had a lot of masks that we were already producing. So we thought, okay, we can keep these women at the Buy2V program working, making these masks to donate to vulnerable people groups in Cambodia. And, you know, the masks are great because they wear them, of course, during the pandemic, but then they also wear them on a daily basis due to air pollution. So it's pretty common. So, you know, it's a real need perpetually in that country. So we've been able to donate hundreds of masks to people in Cambodia to help with that. As restrictions are lifted, we're now shipping them here to the United States and can distribute them to other people groups. So with our Match Madness campaign, which is what it was originally called, we kind of added in a mask madness component. We were able to not only match dollar for dollar, but we were able to do a 2-for-1 match. So for every dollar donated, we had a pool of donors when we added this new component of the masks in that said, hey, we're going to step it up and we'll match with $2. And a portion of that was designated specifically for the production of masks to be donated in Cambodia and then other parts of the world as we were able to do that. So then, of course, that started catching people's attention because it was becoming more relevant to what the hot topic was, you know, and still continues to be. So we were able to really gain some ground, and we had set out to raise $40,000. We actually ended up raising $76,000 because people were so excited and they were seeing us meet a need right now that was, you know, top of mind for everybody, But then as they started donating and learning more and looking into it, you know, they wanted to be part of the vocational training programs and things that we regularly offer.
Do you notice that in general? Do you think with some of the fundraising things that people respond really well when there's a specific need? And, you know, not only that in this instance, but something that was so relevant to what's happening in the world that's top of mind for everybody. Do you find that when you have a specific need that you're trying to raise funds for, that people maybe respond a little bit differently than they would typically?
Absolutely. I think people like knowing my dollar did exactly this, and they like kind of having that visual. So it's a tremendous difference for us.
I think it's really great that through this campaign, you were able to fill a need with just raising funds, general funds for your organization, and then also fill this need that they had in Cambodia. And I think you guys have also been able to fill some needs as far as the masks go here as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So once restrictions on shipping the masks here to the United States lifted, you know, the women love making the masks, and like they feel like they're contributing to the pandemic and like helping out. And so it's been a really cool and unique thing to watch them get excited about it. And so they wanted to continue making the masks. And we have been able to connect with some of our partners here in the United States who are working with schools or youth organizations, helping at-risk or economically challenged people groups. And so they wanted to be able to provide masks. So as students return to school or as they try to restart their programs, you know, they want to have the kids wearing the masks to try to help contain the spread of COVID. And so we've been able to actually bring some of the masks here. And it's been really exciting because these are partners that have worked with us for years. They've supported us financially. And of course, we say thank you and invite them to be, you know, part of our events and share with them and things like that. But because our work is primarily in Cambodia, it's really difficult for them to feel like there's any hands-on interaction. It's hard for us, you know, of course we would love it if all of them could go to Cambodia with us and see firsthand and get that personal connection, because it kind of is like the reward for their investment type of thing. But that's not possible for everybody. So with this, you know, it's kind of a different way for us to actually be able to say thank you. That's more than just a verbal thank you. And I think our partners have been really excited because, you know, we're affirming their work that they're doing here, and we're helping them meet needs that they want to be able to meet. It's just been a really cool way for us to show them that we're in this with them and how much we appreciate them and respect the work that they are doing. And when we can, if we can help, we will help. Like, it's more than just us asking for money and saying thank you. Like, we really want to have a relationship with them. So it's been really cool.
Yeah, I think that's really great. And we talked with one of our other guests a few episodes ago about just the way that you relate to your donors, that you can sometimes kind of fall into that trap of making it really transactional. Like, it's always just mm-hmm. about asking them for money over and over again. But this gave you a really unique and I think awesome opportunity to kind of turn the tables on that relationship a little bit and just show them how much you not only appreciate them, but just care about them in general and kind of further extend your mission that way.
Yeah, it's been really neat.
You've had some good success here. It's helped with some partnerships, you know, like it's this giving back to donors and, you know, you've been able to keep these women working in Cambodia. But can you tell me a little bit about thought process? How were you guys feeling when this all happened 2 days before your March Madness? Was the initial thought like, just scrap it? I mean, I know this, you know, you're trying to make money. You know what I mean? Like, what were those conversations like? Not only that one, then you changed. And then that one also seems to be titanicking, you know, to the beginning of the ocean. So talk to me about what were you guys thinking? Where were your minds? Like, what was going on?
Well, three of us were actually en route to meet with a new donor in Charlotte, North Carolina. And so we hit the road planning to make a few stops, have some donor meetings with some of our donors in Kentucky, Tennessee, North Carolina, Ohio, and kind of just, you know, we were on the CGI tour, so to speak. And so we left super excited to, you know, spend time with this new church partner that we have and meet some of these donors that we don't typically get to meet with. And then right around Nashville, Tennessee, we started hearing more and more, okay, it's, you know, things are going crazy with COVID here in the United States. We're going to start looking at shutting things down. We need to, you know, not have large gatherings. We need to not be meeting. And as soon as we started hearing that, then some of the appointments we had lined up for boutique wholesale meetings started to drop off because they were having to shut the boutique. And then we were also having donors contact me saying, we really want to be cautious. We need to cancel. The church that we were going to be at, we were supposed to be in their services, and they plan on having services. And so we made it to North Carolina, planning to go to them the following morning. And then that's when everything shut down with being able to have large gatherings. So
yes,
we ended up coming back. And of course, in the middle of all of this, there's three of us in our CGI minivan, which is an adventure to be in and of itself. we're talking about, wow, March Madness is coming up. What if they cancel the NCAA championship? What if it completely is an irrelevant campaign that we've designed graphics for and messaging for and all of this other stuff? And then that happened. So, you know, we're driving back and it gives you a lot of time to have conversations. And we thought about scrapping it entirely. We thought, you know, this is just not the time to even ask people for money. There's too much going on. There's too much stress. There's too much focus on, you know, what do we do in this crisis situation? And we didn't want to be callous to the fact that people were going to be hurting financially, emotionally, as, you know, maybe they know people who, you know, had COVID or passed away from COVID. And so we certainly didn't want to be obtuse to what people were feeling. At the same time, that caused a lot of stress for us because we rely on those donor dollars to keep our programs going. And we really needed an infusion of donor dollars to keep going, or else we were going to be really having to face some critical decisions in the coming months with, okay, how do we even proceed as an organization? And so we actually arrived back to Indiana thinking we weren't going to do anything at all. And the next morning, I had a conversation with our executive director, and I just, you know, it just didn't quite feel like the right thing to not ask at all. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's a need continually, and a disease is not going to stop that need from existing. So that's when we decided to take the approach of just being completely transparent and say, look, we get it. There's a million other things going on. We don't know how this is impacting everybody. We still need help. We can't do it alone. If you've got a dollar to spare, if you've got $10, like, it all helps. And if we can get through this together, then there will still be a CGI for the future. So that's kind of where it first started. And then when we saw that Titanic, as you put it, it was really discouraging because, you know, we poured a lot of energy and honestly just vulnerability. You know, it's exhausting being vulnerable. And so putting that out there and seeing it Titanic and just not succeed past the initial sort of excitement was really kind of discouraging. And, you know, there was definitely that temptation to just not even think about it, to just chalk it up to, okay, this is not going to succeed because COVID, and it's just, you know, we're just going to have to suffer the loss. We'll figure it out at a later date how to do this, and we'll just let this go. But then as everything came together with needing to keep our BuyTV team working in Cambodia and providing for them, just feeling that responsibility and feeling that desire to want to do something to help, because that is something that we're passionate about. Like, it just felt like maybe there was an opportunity here to make lemonade out of lemons, not to be completely cheesy, but
and then you have a successful campaign where you raise $77,000. Was there some like reflections you kind of going, okay, third time's a charm, you know? I mean, the first time didn't even take off, and second time, do you feel like you guys, like, as I mean, I know you're past it now, but like any reflection on thinking like what you maybe learned through that process?
We definitely learned that people are generous, and sometimes even more so in the really trying times. I think that people really rally and rise to the occasion, and just inviting them into something exciting that allows them to take action in the middle of something like a pandemic, people are going to do that. We like those challenges. We like feeling like we're part of something bigger than what's going on in our own world and our own household. This was an opportunity to do it. And so that's really how we started looking at things was, sure, we're asking for support. We're asking for their financial contributions. But more than that, more importantly than that, it's bigger than that. It's giving them this opportunity to make an impact that is felt not only here, but around the world, because they're helping people in multiple places. And so, you know, when you can invite people into something like that, into something that is truly a movement and not just a project, I think that's when people really, you capture their hearts. And when you capture their hearts, then
the you capture dollars.
Happens. Yeah, you get the dollars. And I mean, it sounds kind of crass, I guess, to say, but, you know, when you're invested and not just giving, like, there's a tremendous difference in that. And people became invested in the journey that we were taking with the mask campaign and the journey that we're taking still. That's been really incredible.
And I think by and large, people want to help. They want to be involved. Mm-hmm. And in a time like this, I think where people think, well, what can I even do to help? You know, when so much is out of our control, and you can kind of say, no, look here, this is the path. This is a way you mm-hmm. can help, and people will join in with that.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's what it is. So for me personally, it really helped energize me just in my development director role. You know, sometimes it's easy to get lost in that, okay, I have to ask for another dollar another day kind of mentality. But this really just kind of, in a way, was refreshing, because it reminded me that's not really what we're doing. What we're doing is giving people the opportunity to do something significant. And whether that's with Center for Global Impact or wherever, I think just giving people those opportunities, they, like you said, they want to help. They want to be part of it. It's not really fun or rewarding to just sit at home doing nothing, but it can be really overwhelming to try to figure out what your next step is. So if we can just say, hey, here's a great step for you to take to do something, then, you know, if I can help them with that, I'll do it.
Absolutely.
So talk to us a little bit about events. Big events are typically the lifeblood of an organization, and you have an annual event that is supposed to be in August or is in the fall typically, and it's a big live event. So talk to us a little bit about how you're changing what you're doing to address the need now that COVID seems to be spiking again.
Our annual gala, which is our largest fundraiser of the year, is August 27th. Originally, it was August 29th, but it was a large in-person event. And with everything going on, we actually made the decision back in, I think it was April, to switch from a live event to a virtual event, because we just weren't really sure what was going to happen with COVID. We weren't really sure how long it was going to last. So yeah, I'm really thankful that we made the decision to go ahead and make it virtual, because, you know, we're certainly seeing the spikes now. And so it feels definitely like we are not going to be able to be in person. So switching to virtual is a little bit daunting, quite frankly, because we've never had a virtual event before. You know, we've done some online peer-to-peer fundraising and things like that, but to do something like a gala that is traditionally live, we've never done that as an organization. And so, and I'm really nervous. We're all nervous. Like, how are our donors going to respond? Are people going to watch? Are people going to be as invested or as generous as they have been at the live event? And ask me on August 28th, and I can tell you the answer to that. I don't know what's going to happen, but we are working really hard, and we're really honestly excited to have the opportunity to switch to a completely virtual format. You know, our live event, our goal was going to be around $150,000. That seemed a little bit intimidating to have to do through a virtual gala event when we have no idea how people will respond. But one of the blessings of not doing a live event is not having that overhead of the venue, the caterer, the flowers, and all of that. And so we realized, okay, so first of all, it's not really $150,000 that we need to raise to meet the goal to keep our programs going, but we can raise more like $100,000 and still come up with the funds that we need. So this centers around student tuition and raising money for our two other programs. So I've mentioned Bite2V, but our others are Imprint Project and the Culinary Training Center. And so, you know, this really is a huge infusion of cash into those programs that allow us to provide vocational training and life skills and things like that. And so we have been really just spending since April when we made the decision, you know, kind of just learning about virtual events. I'm completely out of my element. I'm not super tech savvy. I don't even know all the words of the questions I want to ask the questions sometimes. And so it's really just been me sitting in on webinars and watching different examples of virtual events, just trying to pick up as much as I can and cram it into my brain to figure out some of the things that we want to do. And one thing that we really wanted to make sure we were able to do is still provide some type of interactive experience, but then also still have the flair and the fun that you normally have at a gala. Mm-hmm. So, you know, typically, you know, there's flowers and people are having a nice dinner and you get to hang out and, you know, talk to everybody. So how do we recreate that when we're not actually together? And so we're encouraging people to host watch parties to watch the live stream event that we're doing on August 27th. We've actually, one of our board members is a professional chef. And so he has graciously donated his time and his talent and has said that he's going to prepare a chef made meal. So people can order a dinner for six is what we're just calling it. And, you know, people can order it to have at their watch party. It's going to be heat, eat, enjoy. I know it's going to be better than anything I would make. So, you know, they still have that kind of that fun sort of fancy, you know, ooh, gala kind of feel because they have this great chef made meal. Every single box is an opportunity for us to fundraise. So we've got the cost of the box in there for the, you know, the ingredients and the packaging and everything. But then each box at $500 also provides an entire month of vocational training in either Imprint Project or Culinary Training Center. So it adds the fun, but it's, you know, it's one additional tool for us to fundraise for this virtual gala. And we're doing some other fun things with it. We've partnered with a local distillery, Eighth Day Distillery. They're creating a special cocktail. They're going to do a video. We'll put it on the gala website. There's a whole page that's just dedicated to hosting watch parties, some tips, tricks, and fun things. So people can watch this video. Ooh, the cocktail, you know, it's going to pair with the meal. So they're working on that. Kind of helps give a little business to Eighth Day, who's donated to our silent auction, you know, because people are going to stop in and buy the ingredients and things like that. Working on getting a florist to do, you know, what makes a great centerpiece and how to choose flowers for a watch party event when you're doing a dinner party. And I'm going to put a playlist on there so people have some music in the background because, you know, we don't want it to be awkward. So as a little ambiance still.
Yes.
So different fun components that they can have in their home and hopefully, you know, a watch party with six or so people, you know, do it in your house. Better yet, do it on the back patio if it's going to be a nice night. That way people can still be socially distant and still have fun together and watch the program. And we're really excited because, you know, before with a live event, the scope of the people that are able to be there is, you know, we're geographically confined to a certain area. People are only going to drive so long to come spend the evening with you. And so this way we don't have that barrier. It's open to anybody. So we have supporters throughout the United States. Everybody can be part of this event. Everybody can bid on the online auction. We'll ship the auction items to them. So, you know, we're doing that for the entire month of August to give plenty of time for people to look through the items and put their bids in and things like that. And it gives us a chance to actually do this gala with our friends in Cambodia. You know, it's different time zones. They're not going to be able to like make a live appearance because of technology. And, you know, we don't want to risk that or anything, but they can actually participate with us and see, you know, what a gala experience is like and be part of the Center for Global Impact Gala, which they've never gotten to do before. So we're pretty excited about being able to include them and just have them with us. And I think honestly that they may have some ideas for future events that we would never even think of. So, you know, I think that's going to be really cool to get their perspective and have them looking and seeing and just kind of observing what we're doing.
Yeah, I love all the thought into all the details that you guys have put into your planning so far. And I think as we've talked to other people, everyone's wondering with everything going virtual, you know, what can we do to make these events events that people actually want to show up to, events that are a little more special and make people just feel engaged and involved and part of a community. So as you guys have been kind of thinking through all these details and coming up with all that stuff, has it felt for you like a new lease on creativity as you're sort of reimagining the whole thing?
Yes, and I'm kind of loving it, if I'm completely honest. You know, our gala is good. I've been, before I was on staff, I've been, since I've been on staff, of course, and, you know, it's a nice evening, and I look forward to it, but this year, I really wanted to do something different to make it stand out, to just freshen things up a little bit. You know, it was feeling like we needed something new, and we weren't coming up with anything. Nobody on the team was really having any, you know, aha moments, like this would be super cool to bring in, and so, you know, it was just kind of feeling like, the same format, new venue. That was the one thing I was excited about, but, you know, just kind of the same format. And so by saying, you know, hey, we're not going to do it, we're just going virtual, almost nothing is the same when you make that transition. And so you have to challenge yourself to really think through the start. It's just like this clean slate, fresh, you know, totally new event, and you get to create it however you guys want to build it. And so, you know, the more we listen to other people who switch to virtual events or observe some virtual events, the more we learn, the more ideas we've gotten. And, you know, I'm nervous because I have no idea how it's going to do, but I'm also just really excited because we have been able to bring in elements like, you know, having a cocktail design or, you know, bringing the dinner boxes in or just, you know, how we're going to approach different things. And honestly, it's kind of helped with our marketing. I feel like it's more cohesive, the pieces that we will be putting out, than it has been in the past, because we've really been challenged like, okay, it's a virtual event. So sure, we're going to have our live stream event where we get to actually verbally share with people, but it's going to be a lot visual. And so, you know, how do we really focus in on that to make sure we're conveying a consistent message through basically the entire month of August, culminating on the 27th with the actual live stream event, so that it feels connected and it feels like one event and not just like random snippets of information being flung at people. So yeah, it's been kind of cool.
Has this made you think differently about events in the future? Even once, let's say, COVID is done, vaccine, whatever happens, you know, we can't gather together again. Is there something that you feel like you're going to try to carry over with you from this time going forward?
Absolutely. I don't think that it's going to be a question of, do we do a live event or a virtual event? I think from now on, it's going to be both. So as we plan a live gala in 2021, hopefully we can still have that. But I definitely want to have that virtual component because I want to keep involving people who haven't been able to actually be present physically in the past. There's no reason we can't do a live stream directly from the gala and add some virtual things in. There's no reason we can't make it a month-long visual campaign on social media and through emails and things like that that really tells a more complete story of what we're trying to communicate on the night of a live event. And so I think from here on out, we're just going to plan virtual components that correlate and fit into the live event plan.
Again, as we kind of talked back at the beginning, you guys had a plan, you know, like you had a plan for the year. Like we have our March Madness. And then you had a golf outing, which we haven't talked about, that also went virtual. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So not virtual. We COVIDized it.
Oh, you COVIDized it. Okay. So you've had several things that have just changed. You know, that either stopped or, you know, if you had to change the golf outing to COVIDize it. And now your main fundraising event is now virtual. So, and there's a lessons of kind of resiliency here. You know, you didn't stop, you know, and you lost a couple times. But what would you want to say to others that might feel like you did in March when everything, you know, that initial sink, but kind of going, they're looking at the future kind of going, what we've typically done hasn't worked and we've tried something else and it's not working. What would you want to say to other organizations or marketers out there that you feel like your team has learned through all this?
I think I would want to share with everybody that fundraising has been around forever. there are, of course, the tried and true tips, tricks, strategies, tactics, and everything like that. And I think those are a good foundation for what fundraising will need to be in the future. And I think COVID really forced us to remember, first of all, that it's not just about getting the dollars, but inviting people into something bigger and doing something larger than they can on their own. And I think COVID has really forced us to remember, first and foremost, I think fundraising is an art form. I think that that's beyond just a scientific formula for how to raise dollars. I think, you know, as art reflects what's going on in the world, I think fundraising also has to do that. And, you know, remembering that creativity and not being afraid to do something different, to think outside the box, and to fail, because failure is the best way to really learn how to move forward and the only way to learn how to improve. You know, I think just don't let that hold you back from taking a risk and being creative and remembering there is more to this than formulas and strategies and checking things off of a list. And it is far more than just a dollar that we're raising. We're raising inspiration and hope for other people. I mean, I think when you share that, other people get excited and the dollars will follow the mission.
I think that's a great message for anyone. And as Lauren mentioned previously, we've talked to some other guests and it's, yeah, you got to reach out, not just to ask for a dollar. You know, you've got to, it's relationship based, and that it is when you can connect them to mission and they feel a part of something, as you alluded to earlier, that's when you get momentum. When you're not just talking about what you do, but what they get to be a part of. And I think that's really a powerful messaging and powerful communication to people that they can be a part of something. So, Kimberly, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you'd like to find show notes and links, visit us at 2355productions.com. Please don't forget to subscribe on your favorite platform to continue to get episodes delivered to you as soon as they are released. In our next episode, we will be talking with Sue Ann Werling of the Brown County Humane Society. They recently finished a fundraising campaign for a new building, and she shares the tactics they used to raise $3.2 million in just 2 years. It's a lot of money. It was a great success for them. So we hope you will join us. Until then, take care.